Hello and welcome to this, the inaugural Filthy Few podcast. I'm Firaz and I'm going to be your humble narrator for this upcoming musical series. We're moving into the future, getting down with the kids and supplying you with the finest cuts, the choicest beats and the freshest talent. Over these series of podcasts, we'll be showcasing the people we think will be rocking it over the coming weeks, months and years. We're getting them pre-Ego, pre-Kate Moss and pre-Prima Donna, hopefully pre-Bling too. Check out our MySpace site for further information. You can find that on myspace.com/filthyfewuk. We'll keep you updated with podcasts and links to the bands we feature so you can show your love and appreciation. So what have we got in store for you on this inaugural journey? Well, here, we've decided to start things with a bang. We trekked over to Scandinavia and investigated the magic of the Roskilde Festival. So stay tuned for some interviews with the management, the musical genius that is the Fortet, and some of the best unsigned music around. Formalities aside, let's kick things off and come worship in the temple among the filthy ones. The first tune from our mysterious box of records comes from the vodka-swilling Camdonians that are the Dirge, with their sweet little ditty, The Little Things. Dirge there with their salacious offering, The Little Things. Carl Barrett loves them. They've played at Coco for his night not so long ago, and you can find out more information where they'll be gigging and where they'll be swilling in the coming weeks by logging on and interacting. myspace.com/The Dirge. Moving swiftly on, let's get down to the nitty gritty. After a 12-hour travel marathon encompassing one night bus, three trains and one plane, Filthy Few arrived in the promised land of Denmark. Roskilde is this year's largest European festival. Usually Glastonbury takes the title, however, as it's not on, the crown goes to Denmark's little nugget of musical goodness. Headlining this year were Morrissey, Bob Dylan, Roger Waters, who performed a quadraphonic live rendition of Dark Side of the Moon, Kanye West, the Arctic Monkeys, Guns N' Roses, Mattis Yahoo, Too Many DJs, Franz Ferdinand, the Kaiser Chiefs, I think you get the point. And it's not just music, there's a load of other activities on the site too. We'll be investigating more later. This year was the 36th Roskilde Festival, stretched over 8 days with at least 79,000 people in attendance. Across 7 stages, you could witness some of the biggest musical talents of the moment, with sprinklings of less well-known, more obscure acts specialising in everything from ambient hip-hop to Swedish heavy metal. The beauty of Roskilde is its refusal to conform. It wasn't swamped by big corporate logos and fickle plugs, oh no, nor did they want to drain every morsel of cash you have on you and treat you as a walking dollar sign. Or should I say krona? After this short musical interlude, we'll be chatting to one of the festival organisers and taking a look at the wackier side of Roskilde. First, though, let's feast our ears on some very good friends of the Filthy Few. It's those crazy Nottingham boys, late of the pier, recently name-checked by the Sunday Times newspaper as being starlets for the future, a tag that's very well deserved. The Filthy Few expects big things. Turn it up. That was Late at the Pier, the Midlands' finest. You can check out more information by logging on to myspace.com/Late of the Pier. And stay tuned to Filthy Few in the coming weeks for a special exclusive interview with the band. Right now, though, let's catch up with one of the Roskilde family.
My name is Espen Danielsen and I'm spokesman of Roskilde Festival.
Okay, and how's this year's festival been compared to other festivals?
We think it's one of the best we have had for many, many years. It has been a lot of party, fabulous functioning, and still it was very peaceful. The police even told us that for now the whole festival has been more peaceful than a normal evening in the local city of Roskilde, which is not a violent city or anything.
And you've had 10,000 more people here.
Yes, exactly. 79,000. I think with Glastonbury's off, then we are the biggest festival in Europe right now.
Okay, and what elements have you enjoyed this year so much? Which band, maybe?
Of course, I have enjoyed lots of the bands. From my point of view, the most important thing is that the audience go and look at the smaller bands, the up-and-coming bands. For example, I was at Tech9, hip-hop act, at our smaller stage. totally full and people was up to it and so on. I think that was cool. And then new smaller things like the lake for breakfast. First time this year. First quite time. Fun.
Any good feedback from everybody? Everybody likes it?
Yeah, yeah. It's just thumbs up, everybody. It.
And how do you book the bands? So, I mean, you have obviously big names. This year you've got Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, you've got Bob Dylan, you've had Morrissey, you've had Kanye West, and then the smaller bands. How does Roskilde book their bands?
We have people we communicate with, and then we have all the audience writing for us. Last year we got 130,000 requests for bands, for example, and then we of course all go out and listen to music and get in a lot of demos. And that's basically that, looking on the band, is their career going on, is this interesting, are they playing cool live and so on. And then we try to choose these 170 bands, which is, of course, nothing compared to how many bands is applying.
And so recycling is a very big part of Roskilde.
Yeah.
Tell me what goes into the recycling. It seems very good that people are maybe encouraged to tidy up themselves, create less mess by taking back the cups and getting a refund.
I think the important thing is that Roskilde is all the way through done by volunteers, because it's a non-profit. All we earn, we give away for humanitarian projects. And that's also why people want to use a lot of time and energy into environmental work. So this year, for example, we made a competition with the audience. If they could, the camp, which was nice, would get a backstage pass for Orange Stage. And for each bag of garbage they came with, they were given one cold beer. And it was extremely cool. For 3 days, all 33 tons of garbage. Yeah, and the winning camp did make bags 490 or something. So it's fun.
So how long ago did Roskilde start?
The first year was 1971. So it's very, very old. The inspiration was Isle of Wight and Woodstock, basically.
Okay. And who did you have that first year? Was it as big as it is today, or is
no,
it?
No, of course not. It was much smaller. It was done by two high school students.
Okay.
But they were selling 3,000 tickets, but there was around 15,000 people, because at that time they were not so good at fences and guards and ticket systems and so on. And it was lots of different bands, all Danish bands at that time, and all kinds of music. So it was more or less like, you know, peace, love and harmony thing.
And how important do you think it is to have the, you know, the humanitarian and the environmental kind of causes that you support? Do you think that's important for festivals? Because obviously they create a lot of mess, a lot of a lot of rubbish.
I think for us it's very, very important, because it's 21,000 volunteers working here, and they are basically doing that because we support good purposes. Then they think it's like going out and getting in money for a good situation. Here you do it by making a festival, and it's a funnier way to do it. So in that way, for us, I think it's a key thing. Else I think Roskilde couldn't manage to be if this values wasn't in the heart of anything.
And over the years, who's the best person you've seen perform on the Orange Tents?
I've seen a lot of good.
I can imagine.
I would like to mention Björk, who was the ending act some years ago, who played beautiful, beautiful music, and at the same time had the fireworks going on, and she could control it so it fits with the music. It was so beautiful.
You've had a lot of legends play here. I mean, this year, Bob Dylan, Morrissey, we've seen Roger Waters is tonight. Who stands out from the legend?
I think the Hard Rock was quite good. Tool made it a fantastic concert, I think, because they had the whole crowd, and Tool is not playing very mainstream rock. It's really a bit complicated. I think they were one of the best main acts we had this year so far.
And do you have any maybe who will you be booking next?
Of course, we have a lot of suggestions. It's a bit too early to say what is possible, but we work quite hard to have, of course, always we would love AC/DC, but they haven't played festivals for a long time. We hope they will start soon.
And I hear Dolly Parton has quite a following.
That's right.
You have a petition, or no? Yeah.
Yes, I got 2,000 signatures from audience yesterday saying Dolly Parton needs to go on stage, and we've worked for that for a few years now. Let's hope we will be successful next year.
And what's your one festival tip for people out there that may not been to a festival before? What's the one piece of advice that you think is most important?
That you have to go to Roskilde Festival to have the feeling of a real festival.
To the pigs from us. Tuned in now to the Filthy Few podcast of it.
That little nugget of musical goodness came from Daybreak. They've now rebranded and rehashed themselves as the Dead World Leaders. Good friends of the Filthy Few, they've supported the likes of the Arctic Monkeys, Snow Patrol and the Lars. You can check out more information by logging on to daybreakmusicuk.com. Moving swiftly on, Filthy Few took time out of our festival rounds to catch up with Kieran Hebden. He's the man behind Fortet. Prior to Fortet, Kieran was part of the post-rock band Fridge. As Fortet, he's become highly respected all over Europe with his hip-hop, electronica, techno and jazz-infused productions. He's produced material for the likes of Warp Records and Domino and had his work featured in commercials by Sony and Nike, as well as opening for Radiohead on the European tour. He's also remixed the likes of Badly Drawn Boy, Beth Orton, Block Party and the Super Furry Animals. Let's check out what he had to say. Okay, so Fortet, and you've also done other diverse things such as Fridge. Where did your inspiration for music come from?
I've never even thought about it. I've just been doing music as long as I can pretty much remember. And I think when I was about kind of 12, I started playing guitar and as in bands and stuff at school the whole time I was there at secondary school. And formed Fridge when I was like kind of 15, I think. And got record deals and stuff pretty early on and it's just kind of gone on and sort of grown from there.
And who were your early influences when you first started?
Quite diverse, because my father's like a huge music fan, so I grew up with what's kind of classic, like soul and rock and funk and jazz and all this sort of stuff had been played to me since I was born. And then the two kind of big things going on when I was a teenager was like Nirvana and that, and all the kind of like big sort of grunge bands, and also like drum and bass was kind of all happening, kicking off in London. And I think those were the two main kind of things when I was a teenager that seemed like the most exciting things going on, and that's when I started developing my own sort of taste, really.
And then you got more into the electronic side.
Yeah, I was in bands and stuff, and we started messing around with synthesizers and things. And then I went to college and I got a computer, and suddenly on the computer I realized, like, I'd been heavily into hip-hop and stuff, and was really into interesting kind of like sampling stuff and looping it and things. And then I was on I had the computer at college, and suddenly I had this tool that would let me do all that, like sequencing and programming drums and doing all this stuff. And that's when I feel like I kind of found this whole new world, you know, that kind of opened up for me, and I started making music and that way, and people seemed to really like it. And you know, now I've done loads of albums.
And okay, so you play all over the world. What's your favourite country and why to play in?
It can vary. You could play one country, you could play it twice, and one time it'll be great, one time it'll be rubbish. You know, I think playing live is such a kind of night by night thing. You know, it depends. Like, overall, I probably had best shows in London. It's like my hometown. You know, people like turn out to see me there. But you know, I've had incredible nights everywhere, from Taiwan to Iceland to Brazil. You know, all over the place. But.
And you play 8-hour sets at the Cross, don't you? That's quite a marathon.
At the end at the moment. Yeah, I'm doing a residency there with Timo Mas at the moment. Yeah. I met him last year in Ibiza. He asked me to come and play at this night he was doing. I think he just said he wanted someone who would do something completely different, you know, just to like change things up a bit and have someone. And I did the first few, like the warm-up, and then he played. And then he said to me, oh, you know, we should do this and do something completely different. So he does this residency at the end, and he does 8 hours and I do 8 hours. And he's in the main room and I'm like in the lounge, and I think it's exciting for him because he knows there's someone playing more kind of off the wall music and stuff at a regular kind of house night, and it's exciting for me because I'm playing at like a regular house night, you know, which isn't what people would normally expect me to play at.
And 8 hours is quite a long time. Have you got anything that you have to have with you? I mean, it's like going to the office really, isn't it?
You have to have some really long records with you so you can make it to the toilet every now and then. But I think it's brilliant. I never really thought about it, and then Timo actually said to me, he was like, oh, you should try doing like 8 hours. It's, you know, it's completely different to, because I DJ all over the place and you just get like 1.5 to 2 hours or something, and it flies by. And then doing the 8 hours, it's a completely different mentality, you know, like play really different records and you play them for much longer, and you just relax into it in a different way. And you know you can build a crowd up for like 3 hours or something. You don't have to like try and do everything you want to do in half an hour.
Festivals, how are you enjoying Roskilde this year?
It's great. I was here last year as well, and summer's a thoroughly enjoyable time for a person like me. You know, I go to all the nice kind of festivals all over the place and hang out with bands and hear good music and do shows. And I'm playing with a drummer at the moment, this guy Steve Reed, who's this he's like 60-year-old drummer. He used to play with James Brown and played with Sun Ra, all these incredible musicians. And I'm only doing stuff, just doing some shows with him over the summer, and kind of taking a bit easier than I did last year. But yeah, having him on stage today and seeing the crowd respond to, like, he's so truly incredible on drums and such an amazing kind of performer. And I think it's exciting for me to bring someone like that, something like this, where, you know, you wouldn't expect to see, yeah, you know, like a 60-year-old jazz drummer suddenly on the stage doing something like that, and seeing people react to it was really, really good.
How do you think Roskilde differs to maybe other festivals in the UK or abroad? I think it's got a certain something about it.
It's like somewhere between kind of like, I know, it's like a bigger tea in the park or something, I guess, or something like that. And, I think it's bigger than the festivals we've got in the UK at the moment, but they're not as big as Glastonbury, which is always the mother of all festivals. I think nothing's like Glastonbury for me, you know. I think there's nothing I go to that even seems even vaguely like Glastonbury. I go there and it's a completely different world compared to everything I go to. But Roskilde is definitely one of the good ones. I think you know, there's a lot of good festivals in Europe now. It's hard to...
Have you got any favourites? Any that you...
Benicassim in Spain. That's one of the really, really great festivals. There's always good music. You're on the beach all day, and there's a swimming pool in the backstage and things like that. It's like definitely a really good one.
What's your one festival tip, would you say?
I'm so spoiled now, you know. I have dressing rooms and trailers at festivals and things. You know, I did this one Coachella in America last year, and I had like an air-conditioned trailer at the festival. It was in the desert. And
that's a huge one.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, my experience of festival isn't even vaguely realistic anymore. You know.
And when you were younger, would you sort of go along and camp?
Yeah, I've been going to festivals since I was 14. I think it was my first one. I went to the first Phoenix Festival, and I've loved it always. And I camp at like Glastonbury and stuff. I camp and. I went for like 5 days or something at Glastonbury last year. It's kind of the worst I think I've ever felt, almost. But
you almost need a holiday to get over, don't you? Now, the digital revolution with music. Now, what do you think? It's a good thing? Do you think it's a bad thing? You know, lots of DJs now perhaps play more CDs, vinyls, mm-hmm. perhaps gone down in a slight way. How much do you think it's changed the industry itself?
To be honest, it doesn't really matter to me, as long as always like strong musical ideas are going to win through, you know. And you could be playing. You can play CD, you could be playing 78, you know, or anything. And if you've got strong musical ideas and know how to entertain a crowd, you know, it's going to be, you know, exciting. And I think people should just use whatever allows them to make the best music possible, you know, really. And, you know, I think one of the things that's exciting with people being able to burn their own CDs and do stuff so quickly and use laptops and DJ sets and everything, I like the speed of it all, you know. I like the fact that someone can have an idea the day of the show and, you know, make it real and actually play it out that night, you know, is an exciting thing. But I don't know, I think people shouldn't really worry about trends or anything. They should just pursue whatever they need to then make the best and most interesting music. I find it a bit boring when everybody becomes sheep and, you know, all kind of one kind of, you know, trend or whatever. That bugs me a little bit. I think, you know, people worry about those things so much, they should just get on with, you know, being good at what they do.
Do you think it's more accessible to other people? You know, anyone now can really buy a laptop and experiment, whereas before you have a you know, much larger setup now. So,
oh yeah, completely. And I've seen that since when I started, when I was like 15. I've seen that kind of get better and better each year. You know, that you can buy more and more simple equipment, you know, that allow you to do, you know, anything you need to do at home. And that's an incredible thing, I think. You know, if you're a young kid who wants to make music, to know that the tools are there to do it, you know, and to not have that someone sitting there being like, oh, you know, you spend £10,000 on the Abbey Road or whatever to make a record, you know, knowing that everybody knows that's not true anymore. And I think that's a, you know, a refreshing thing. Like, it's one of those things where you open those kind of floodgates and suddenly there's a hell of a lot more music around now than there probably ever was before. There's so much music being made, and, you know, when there's such a huge quantity, there's a lot more bad music being made than normal as well, you know. But, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. But like I was saying before with the DJing thing, if you've got strong ideas, and then, you know, they'll shine through everything. You know, and that's anything that gives access to people, regardless of whether they've got lots of money or not, I think is a good thing.
What do you prefer, DJing or producing?
It's all just different experiences. You know, I like a bit of everything. You know, that's what makes life so good, is to, one, you know, today I've been playing at Roskilde, and next week I'm going to go home and work on some remixes, and then after that I'll be DJing in a club or something, and then I'll go play guitar in a band for a few days and just do all these like different things. And it's just constantly keeping it constantly fresh for me is important, you know, like not letting anything get tired.
Any advice to aspiring producers, perhaps someone sat in a bedroom, wants to get into it, doesn't really know how? Have you got, you know, what tips would you give?
I always tell people to, you know, listen to a lot more music, you know, like sometimes people spend more time kind of messing around with equipment and doing all these things thinking that's the key to, like, you know, getting their music out there, whereas it's more important that they go out there and be inspired, you know, and make sure they're doing, like, go and hear the best DJs you can and the best bands and all these things, and, you know, really learn from it. And I think, you know, and if you're music that you believe in, there's nothing you can do for yourself, and actually find some fans, find some people that will kind of support, you know. The people that first really supported me were just people who worked in record shops, you know, my local record shops. I gave them like demo tapes and stuff, and was like, you know, this is what I'm doing, and, you know, they'd really kind of help me out. And it was in a record shop that I met the person that got me my first record deal and things like that. You know, I think everybody thinks you just got to, I think just sending demo tapes off to record labels randomly doesn't really get you anywhere. You know, you need to be a bit more clever than that.
You need to put a name to the face on.
Yeah, put some more effort, try and meet some people.
Definitely. And if you've got an ultimate festival lineup, you can choose three acts, dead or alive. Who would they be?
We'd have John Coltrane, Jimi Hendrix and Carl Craig or something.
Nice, nice.
That'd be a good night,
Yeah, definitely. And what's next for you now? What have you got coming up in the next few months, weeks?
I've got a lot of remixes on at the moment. I've got to do that, and then taking a few weeks off. I'm not doing live stuff or DJing for a month, and then August's Big Chill, I think, is the next thing I'm doing in the UK. So.
If there's one Lee you could work with that's, maybe more, perhaps, a little different genre to what you play, who would it be?
I've always wanted to work a really great rapper, I've never...
Kanye West, maybe? He's around tonight.
Busta Rhymes has always been
a big
choice
for me.
It's always, I think, being a middle class guy from London, that big world of hip hop always seems so out of reach, So I think the idea of working one of those big US hip hop guys always seems like an exciting thing. But I don't believe in, you can dream up all these collaborations all the time, but you need to meet someone and have a natural connection with them. That's when good collaborate,
Definitely. Kieran, aka Fortet, thanks very much for your time.
No problem.
Kieran Hebden there, aka The Fortet. Check out more information online at fortet.net. There from the Dirty Dreamers with Three Lines. They played for the Filthy Few at our event in Islington, London a couple of months ago. They'll be playing for Alan McGee, the guy who found those infamous brothers, Liam and Noel Gallagher, at the Notting Hill Arts Club in September. Visit dirtydreamers.com for more information. Now, Roskilde isn't just about the music. It's got a whole load of wacky as well as more sensible side attractions, so you can fill your time by either maybe streaking naked through the festival site, getting advice and information on safe sex, as well as taking a swim in the festival lake. Now, the Filthy Few stumble across these guys on our travels, who create a sort of human hi-fi system in a box.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is it you do?
We are a sound performance choir. And we are making sounds into a long oral connected to an installation, you can call that.
Big
green box with grass on it. And then if you go into the box, you can hear the choir make sounds, and then you can decide what sounds you want to hear and what you don't want to. And that's why it's called a mixolyt.
Mixolyt.
Yeah, because lyt means to hear in Danish.
And you're doing it all day. It's tiring, right, no?
It's tiring, so it's just for an hour, the show.
Just
yeah,
an hour, okay.
Yeah. We're called the Sound Choir WOP.
What? Do you have a website address?
Yes. Just whop.dk. Yeah.
Now, thanks for joining us on this inaugural Filthy Few podcast. We really do hope you've enjoyed the journey. Keep yourself updated with news of future podcasts and check out our MySpace site, myspace.com/filthyfewuk. In the coming weeks, we'll once again be featuring the creme de la creme of unsigned musical talent, free of copyright restrictions and overactive PR agents. Until the next time, though, the Filthy Few loves you.